The Walking Dead Week in Review, Episode 46, where we look back on Season 3, Episode 1, Seeds.
This is Mike from Evolution of the Apocalypse, and when I'm not out putting a bullet in a zombie's brain, I'm listening to The Walking Dead Week in Review with Jason, Jeff, and Mike.
Back with another episode of The Walking Dead Week in Review. It's finally time where we look back at the beginnings.
Get more in-depth and have fun talking about our favorite kills and such.
That's right. Where we can actually kind of dissect things, which is probably one of the more fun things that I like about doing this podcast. You know, it's a blast. I love jumping on right after the episode and getting my initial reactions, but generally at that time, I'm so hyped up in what was going on with the show.
You're so overwhelmed by everything that just happened, and you're trying to remember it as you went through. And what's amazing about, especially this season in particular, that I've noticed is how much I forgot about the first episode of the season.
I know, and so many little things. We have some examples that we can give with stuff. We also have some information from Glenn Mazaria about the episode that we stole. From the Talking Dead TV show.
Right.
So, with that, but first, I want to let everyone know to contact us by giving us a call at 503-454-6941. You can also send us feedback at creepercast.com. You can join us on Facebook and Twitter at Facebook or twitter.com/creepercast. And if you want to leave a message, you want to leave something, it's really best, in my opinion, to go to the website, to the episode, which is always up on the front page for the first couple weeks after it shows up. Click on it and leave a comment there so everyone else can see it. Well, I mean, that sounds like a good deal, right? Right, Jeff?
It sounds like a great deal, especially when they can be heard on the show later.
Exactly.
So we will play it.
And we also have, that's what Jeff was talking about, is we also have a new service on the website called SpeakPipe that, if you don't feel like calling in, you can actually go onto our website and record straight from your computer microphone or your smartphone straight into SpeakPipe, and we can play that. We can get your views of The Walking Dead on the show. We are also on Stitcher. Want to let you know that get that Creepercast and The Walking Dead Week in Review is available for streaming on Stitcher. Stitcher is an award-winning provider of news and talk radio for your mobile phone. It's Stitcher, smart radio, the smarter way to listen to radio, and now the smarter way to listen to the Creepercast and The Walking Dead Week in Review. And with that, we also have the iTunes sweepstakes. So head on over to itunes.com/twditunes, where you can leave us a comment and some stars, hopefully 5. And when we hit 25 reviews, your name will be put into the digital hat, where we will draw a name and you get to choose one thing out of the Creepercast swag store. Where, two chances to enter. One for Creepercast at creepercast.com/iTunes. One for The Walking Dead Week in Review at creepercast.com/twditunes. And you can win your chance of anything. Two chances to enter, two chances to win. I want to welcome Loves back. Of course, me and Jeff have been talking the whole time. Loves, welcome.
Hi. Thanks. I love being here.
And we love having you.
Thanks.
And it's great to be back. I missed last week. So, of course, right. The mid-season finale, I have to miss it.
Of course. That's usually the way it works, right?
Oh, it was so hard. It was so hard not being able to be on and not even seeing it with everyone else.
Trust me, I know since the week before my dog ate my internet connection. And basically, I watched the episode you know, the episode 7 right before watching episode 8. So I basically got 2 hours. It was a 2-hour slam. So, you know, guaranteed I didn't listen to your, you know, to the show last, you know, that week because I didn't want it to be spoiled.
Well, that was the thing is I actually had to make sure because I subscribe.
Yeah, I noticed you're avoiding putting posts and stuff too.
Yeah, I subscribe to The Walking Dead on iTunes. So if I do miss, it automatically downloads. And I had to make sure that I watched the episode before I edited the podcast episode that you guys recorded, because otherwise I would be completely spoiled. And I was also avoiding Facebook too, because, you know, I know I'm guilty of this, which is putting stuff up on Facebook and spoiling it for people that haven't watched it live. So if I spoiled you, I'm sorry. I apologize.
You're not.
And you're, you're thinking you should have watched it, dummy.
That's true. I really am.
Until you're the dummy.
Until I'm the dummy, yes.
And then you're like, crap. I know somebody's going to spoil it for me because I always spoil it for them.
That's it. Well, and that's normally how it is. Normally I'm like, you know what? If you didn't watch it live, you deserve to be spoiled. And then and then we end up, you know, spending the weekend in the hospital and I can't watch it live. And I'm like, crap.
It happens, I guess. At least you didn't wake up with a do not enter dead inside sign at the hospital.
Yeah, that would have been bad. All right. And
speaking of spoilers.
Yes.
We're definitely going to spoil episode 1 of season 3. If you haven't seen it, you've had 9 weeks to do so. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, just be prepared that from here on out, if you listen to any episode of The Walking Dead Week in Review, it's all spoilers because we're talking about the episodes.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, I'm telling you right now, you have to watch the episode before you listen to this podcast. That's
so,
just the way
so
it is.
So click pause, go to iTunes, download the episode.
Right.
Watch it, and then unclick pause.
Yes.
Or click play.
Exactly.
Or, hey, you know what might be fun is to actually play us at the same time as you're watching it. I don't think anything is going to line up like Wizard of Oz or anything, but
Dark Side of
be fun.
Dark Side of the Dead.
Yeah, it might still be fun.
That was actually kind of creepy.
Creepy Side of the Dead.
Yeah.
I love
all
that.
Right.
New podcast, The Creep Side of the Dead, where we literally talk during the episode. We should try that one day just to see how it works out.
Oh no, that could get kind of annoying.
I know. We'd match it up, me at my end and you at yours, and going, okay, in 3, 2, play.
And then our theme song starts right as the Walking Dead theme song does.
Yes.
Goodness.
We should try that once for an experiment. If it doesn't work, we won't release it. Or we'll release it, we'll put it on the website, but not in the feed.
Right now, we're really teasing this right now. Remember, we're in the show at this moment. This isn't just a discussion we're having on the side. So now everybody knows we've been teasing this. And I'm actually hoping to hear some emails about it. You know, get some emails or some of those voicemails or whatever.
Yeah.
Telling us what they think about it. What they think about it. And should Jason be Crow? Should I be... I don't know, one of the other characters.
Tin Man.
Yeah. I mean, should we go the full...
Wouldn't it go the other way, though? Or I don't know if you'd be Crow, but I'd be Tin Man, because everyone says I have no heart anyway when it comes to this show.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk somewhat about some of the stuff where...
you don't have a heart.
Where I don't have a heart.
Hey, Witch of the West or East, whichever one didn't die until the end.
Oh, the Wicked Witch of the West, yes. Yeah. The East died at the beginning when the house fell on her.
I have her outfit. I could just do that.
All right, let's plant some seeds.
Let's plant some seeds. Yes.
Throw some cucumbers and other stuff.
All right. So the Walking Dead seeds basically opens up with all of them, you know, going through the house together. And what I really love about this is, you know, and we talked about this the first time around, that, I mean, they're really they're a warrior team now. They are such a group that they don't even talk to each other, but The first time that I watched it, I thought, wow, look at them going through as a group. Look at how well they're like a well-oiled machine. But then afterwards, this time when I watched it, as I'm watching their facial expressions more, it's more like they're a disgruntled group with each other. Huh. You know, you have the scene where Rick picks up the...
He's irritated with Rick. I mean, that seems to be obvious.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, where... As much as they learned, what is it that, you know, is really, really driving them? Because, you know, they go through and they work well as a team when they're fighting. But as soon as the fighting stops, they still don't talk to each other.
Yeah.
No, they don't.
That's true. Well, they're like scavenging. And yeah, you're right. I did get that. I mean, we know why Rick is disgruntled.
Mm-hmm.
And we know why Rick and Lori aren't talking to each other.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And we kind of get an impression, you know, we know how Carol is because of last season.
Right.
You know, she's already questioning Rick as their leader and everything. So that's a good point, which actually brings up, you know, by the way, Glenn Mazzara actually wrote this episode, which is an interesting take because he's the showrunner and is involved now to the point where he's actually writing episodes.
Right.
But he himself actually said something to the effect of, you have a clip.
Yes.
You know, last time we saw Rick, he told everybody to shut up. They're doing that. And, you know, they've become a tight band of brothers. They've gotten through the winter. They've gotten each other's back. And that's actually something that they've worked out. They've all agreed, okay, we don't know if this is going to work. Let's try it.
You know, and that's kind of where they're
at. Which is a good point, yeah.
Yeah, where, you know, they're like, yeah, let's try it. He's keeping us alive, so that's a good thing. But at the same time, you know, it makes you wonder if they really like the way that Rick is running things. Because he's really, you know, from last season, his whole, you know, it's my way or the highway. This opening is just an extension of that speech that he gave at the end last season.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
That much is true. Although, I mean, especially though, as the episode progresses, though, we learn that everybody's doesn't question Rick as much, because even Carol says later, it's kind of funny how she was the instigator in the, you know, at the end of last season, and then this season she pretty much like was saying that, you know, there's no way Shane could have done this. He's done good so far, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
She was defending him.
Right, and that's where, you know, I think. At the beginning, like I said, you know, everybody's... Whoa. Things are popping up everywhere.
Uh-oh. Told you to stay off those sites.
I know, but how can you? I mean, how can I? I mean... Oh,
how can...
What can you... Those bobblehead things are too addicting. You just need to stop. Just buy the Daryl one and you'll be happy.
You know, okay, I want to jump into Daryl real quick, because after rewatching this again, Daryl and his survival skills is just amazing. And I'm not talking just being able to take out walkers, because Jeff, you found that there's somebody that actually did a count on who took out what, didn't you?
Yeah, this is actually interesting. I'll go through this really quick, and you'll be able to find a link on our site for sure. Is for anybody who checks out the National Post or nationalpost.com, they, you know, obviously an internet newspaper of sorts. And there's a group that the Post, Andrew Barr and Richard Johnson, take a look at a few key statistics about, you know, all 2.5 seasons worth of Undead Mayhem. And they find noteworthy the gradual increase in the body count, obviously, the increasingly creative means of zombie dispatch, which is one of the things we look the most forward to. And the fact that every character seems to have developed a clear enjoyment for putting them down, which has become obvious, especially once I've read this list and then watched this episode again. I was like, holy crap, they are liking it. And by the way, when I said, you know, like 4 or 5 episodes ago, said that Maggie was turning into a badass, after watching this first episode of the season, I was like, whoa, she already was a badass this season. It's like right from the start. But interesting statistics. I mean, these people have way too much time on their hands. And one of the things they've done is they've actually broken down like how many kills each character has. And I thought it was an interesting statistic that Daryl actually only has in 2.5 seasons 18 kills. with the crossbow.
Wow.
So that's the thing is you think that there's a lot more, but really, Rick probably has a lot more, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. Rick actually tops them all off, of course. And that's total kills. But obviously, the most kills currently is with a gun. Machete, I believe, came in second. Or machete or sword, you know, a bladed weapon came in next. And then, of course, and then I guess an axe got a few. And, but of course, obviously the statistic I was the most interested in was the fact that Daryl only has 18 confirmed kills with the crossbow, which, you know, since he's reusing his arrows most of the time at this point, you'd think that it's going to slow him down a little bit.
Yeah. So, and he does have a gun for a sidearm though.
That's true. And
he does have a pistol.
He has taken out like two of them with the pistol. And then, of course, everybody's got a good count with number or with bladed weapons or at least a knife.
Right.
But Rick does, I mean, especially after the cleaning out the prison episode, Rick definitely has outclocked everybody.
Right. Now, with this episode at the beginning, I'm jumping back into Seeds. After they sweep the house and they take out Grandpa Walker and all of them. You know, Carl begins to open a can of dog food that he scavenged from the kitchen, which, by the way, I want to point out that according to U.S. law, dog food has to be safe for human consumption. So if you're starving, you can't eat dog food.
Ew.
Yeah, but nutritious. Along with them, you have Daryl, who's cleaning an owl that he spotted up in one of the bedrooms. And the one thing that I was looking at when he was doing this is, first of all, would owls feed on the dead, or do they only hunt?
I think they only hunt.
Okay.
Owls are prey.
I know they're prey birds, yeah. But I didn't know if they would scavenge also.
No.
Okay. Yeah. Now, here's my next question. Of course, this one applied to an owl. But if they did scavenge on infected people, would they become infected themselves, and would they still be able to fly? Like the crows from, say...
Resident Evil,
yes.
We haven't actually seen any evidence of that, though.
No.
That's the thing, is that this seems to be a human-born, you know, a human-born virus that we haven't seen get into animals yet. I mean, the only thing that we've seen that has that kind of takes us away from the norm of what we were used to with zombies is that they will eat animals,
right?
As they're alive, but we haven't seen a virus spread over to the animals. Now, does that mean that they're not carriers? That's the other question,
right?
But if they're already infected, what difference does it make?
All right, so after that, T-Dog spots some walkers out the window, and the group runs out to their cars/trucks and narrowly escapes. One thing that I noticed with the rewatch, too, is we had a lot more four-wheel drive pickup trucks than we did before.
Yeah.
With the exception of two vehicles, or one vehicle that I, well, two, I guess, because you also have Daryl's motorcycle. All the rest are four-wheel drive pickups, which I think is a great idea because, one, having a bunch of four-wheel drive pickups is a lot better than trying to cram everybody into one vehicle. Yeah. You have multiple people that can ride either in the front or in the back if need be. So if one car breaks down or something happens, they can just jump right into the back. It's a lot easier for hauling gear. It's four-wheel drive, so it can go off-road, and it sits up high. So even if you are going down and there are walkers, you know, trying to get at you, you're able to defend yourself being higher than them.
True.
We had plenty of time to find them throughout the winter.
Well, yeah, and the only car in reality is the one that like is by the car company that is sponsoring the show. So
right, yeah. So after that, the caravan stops in the middle of the road where the group consults a map. Their location is being flanked by herds of walker, and Rick insists they can't keep moving from house to house, especially with Lori's late-term baby. I do have a cut of that. That would be cut number 6.
We got no place left to go.
When this herd meets up with us, we won't be cut off. We'll never make it south.
What'd you say? It's about 150 head?
That was last week.
could be twice that by now.
This river could have delayed them. If we move fast, we might have a shot to tear right through
there. Yeah, but if this group joins with that one, they could spill out this way.
So we're blocked.
Only thing to do is double back up 27, swing toward Greenville.
Yeah, we picked through that already. It's like we spent the winter going in circles.
Yeah, I know. At noon, we'll push west. Haven't been through there yet. We can't keep going house to house. Need to find some place to hold up for a few weeks.
All right. Is it cool if we get to the creek before we head out? Won't take long. We got to fill up on water. We can boil it later.
Knock yourself out.
She can't take much more of this moving about.
What else can we do? Let her give birth on the run.
You see a way around that?
Hey, while the others wash their panties, let's go on. That owl didn't exactly hit the spot.
And what's interesting is right after this, they find the prison. Glenn Mazzaria, actually, you know, it's been one of the biggest questions out there for a while. And Glenn Mazzaria actually referenced this on The Talking Dead, is about them finding the prison and why they're the only ones.
Remember the scene where they're going over the map on the hood of the car?
Yeah.
These herds are moving around, and that's why they, you know, last time we saw them, it looked like the prison was just in the distance. They have to move around. So I think, you know, they're now, there's kind of an opening in where the zombies are tracking and stuff,
yeah.
And they've had a straight shot to the prison. So we just think they've just been the first group to discover it.
And even Andrea kind of talked about that same thing about the them moving around when Michonne came back to give her the pills, and Andrea looked at her and said, "They're coming, aren't they? You should go save yourself."
Yeah.
So what we're really seeing with this first episode and them finding the prison and stuff is that because the walkers, basically they're an unstoppable, they're a force of nature by now, in that they are pushing the survivors around rather than the survivors being able to make a life for themselves someplace.
They're in control.
They really are, because you have them pushing Rick's group around. You have them pushing Andrea around. Obviously, they're, you know, in close quarters, which means that the walkers have basically pushed them near each other, near enough to each other. I mean, theoretically, after a year, you would think that you would be pushed, you know, to the other side of the nation.
True.
Or you would find your safe haven, you know, up on a mountaintop. And I think that's where, you know, maybe my idea of finding a mountaintop may not be a good idea, because as it is, if the walkers just keep following and keep circling, eventually they're going to end up getting to you and pushing you again.
Very true.
You know, it's really not as fun when all you guys do is agree. I mean, I appreciate you agreeing with me.
Well, I'm still thinking of living in the middle of the ocean, so I'm good.
Yeah, but then you got zombie sharks and...
But we don't know if it can go to animals yet.
Yes, we don't know about that. And you just don't go swimming. Recreate yourself.
Yeah, until the sharks grow feet, you're good.
Yeah.
All right, Rick and Daryl end up finding the prison. And so the whole group goes up and they cut a hole in the prison's barbed wire fence, although they didn't go up into the barbed wire area, and ushers the group through. After resealing the hole, Rick outlines a plan to close the gate to the prison and prevent more walkers from entering the yard. He assigns everyone to sniper posts where they can kill off walkers who get in his way. He succeeds in shutting down the gate and helping the group obliterate the remaining walkers in the yard. And I really like the military tactics that, you know, they went with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was awesome.
That was where they were doing precision. Definitely working as a team on that one.
Yeah.
There's that Mazzaro was talking about.
Yeah, so with that, we got cut number five.
If you look at how they take the prison and everything, we had no idea how we were going to do that. So, you know, Grace Walker, who's our production designer, built that. That's actually a studio, and he turned that into, you know, turned the back of the studio into the prison.
Yeah.
And so I went there and had to walk around there for a day or two and think about, okay, if I was Rick, what would I do? How would I – first I'd take this section and then this section,
yeah.
And this, and it kind of laid out. But It was fun to see the set and then figure out the story and how our characters would make decisions.
Definitely. And it was where, and it was during the prison, especially so far this season, that Rick made the number one of the zombie killers still breathing. Because of his running it and everything like that. It's actually interesting. I'm still looking at all these stats, and it's actually pretty cool. But he's up to 86 zombies in 27 episodes. Oh. Keep in mind, one of them was Sophia.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And Daryl is actually up to 41, but only 18 of them was done by Crossbow.
You are so enthralled with that. You're like, I don't even want to talk anymore.
It's actually really interesting because you start to think about, okay, you try to remember their kills, and you forget things like Andrea is up to 22, but her virgin zombie was Amy.
Yeah. Well, and then one of the things that is interesting was the line after they actually get in, and you know, they actually, how weird is it that well, let me play it and then we'll say it.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Nice shooting.
You okay?
I haven't felt this good in weeks.
Good. Oh. Oh. We haven't had this much space since we left the farm.
Oh. Woo! It seems kind of backwards how the most space that they've had in a year is in a prison.
Yeah, yeah. That is definitely a contradiction.
You know, so I think what this kind of tells us is that, you know, even them be, it's the idea that even when you're free, sometimes you're in your own prison. And here they are going into a literal prison, and they're the most free in there. They have the most room to run around. They have the most, you know, not looking around constantly, waiting to be attacked.
True. And this is also when they get to be a little bit, where you also notice their complacency, because they still have walkers all gathered up in a fence staring at them.
like meat.
Like it's dinner, like dinner just arrived, only they can't figure out how to get to it yet. Nobody brought a fork. I mean, you know, something like
that. Staring at them like my dog stares at me when I eat dinner.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And yet they're all like, whoa, we got all this nice, you know, nice new space, blah, blah, blah. And also notice that Rick is the only one that feels the need to go further with it at that point.
Yeah. As he's pacing around the perimeter three times, checking for holes. I mean, the question is, and, you know, is there, you have to enjoy the little things. You have to, you know, have little enjoyments. I don't remember what comedian it said when he was talking about, you know, people claiming that they're not happy. And he says, come on, happiness comes in small doses, in a cigarette, in sex. And, you know, it's not that you're happy all the time. But, I mean, with stuff like this, is it a good idea for them to become slightly complacent and put their guard down? Or should, I mean, I don't know if you could live to be on guard all the time.
You got to be free once in a while, or it'll drive you insane.
Well, it's like we talked about it might have been in the last show that I brought up the fact that the complacency factor, and it's because, you know, if there's only one of them, they're just like, eh, whatever. And then it gets to a group of four or five, then they're like, okay, maybe we should get rid of these. And then it gets up into groups of tens, and we're like, yeah, we need to massacre the walkers. So the complacency they're actually developing is because they've just seen so many of these things walking around that they start to gauge, you know, like every one of us does in a lot of, even like our work situations. I work in the news, and I've had one of those situations where the anchors are, you know, we have a 2.5 minute breaks, and the anchors talk all the way up to the, you know, when you're doing the countdown from 10, as soon as I say one is, or when I say two is when they finally stop talking.
Right.
You just become so complacent and, you know, figure that, oh, I got this figured out. That when you see, you know, one walker, you're like, whatever, I could dodge him, no problem. And that's kind of the way, this is the way we're really seeing them now, is anytime before this, it was all like, oh my God, a walker, kill it.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, anytime before this, to see if you were surrounded by walkers, even if there was a fence in between, you would be on edge. You would be shaking like a chihuahua.
Yeah.
But right now, I mean, they're as calm as could be because they must, you know, now they're realizing that these.
Yeah, they're lumbering slow creatures that have no.
It's not even just that. That you know, the fences, any level of protection, is good.
Yeah,
and allows them to put their guard down. And it comes back to bite them in later episodes too.
Literally.
Yeah, I didn't mean for that to be a pun.
So he had. Let's see. I'm trying to remember where you were at.
Yeah. So, you know, the survivors are celebrating their victory and reveling in the open spaces. I was actually waiting for someone to pull out a football and start tossing it around. That night, Rick is canvassing the yard to ensure the fence hasn't been compromised. While the rest of the group relaxes around a campfire, and Beth sings the song.
Of all the money ere I had, I spent it in good company.
Yes, that song.
I'll play. Which, by the way, was the interesting thing that, you know, that we talk about the regression of humanity in an apocalyptic situation. And this is actually like a callback to tribal days, is that especially like in the Celtic tribes and such, that when the women start singing around the fire at night, that was to call the men home.
Oh, really? I didn't know that
thing. And when you're watching it, I thought it was interesting. The reason why I liked the, you know, that part of the episode so much is because we had, especially Rick finally joined the group, you know, joined back up with the group while the song was going on. And that's, everybody was there. And, it, you know, even the ones that had strayed off to somewhere else had all came to the fire at the time she was singing the song, which goes back to the tribal thing, is that the women would sing around the fire, which was to call the men home.
Well, and the other thing to think about is just the fact that, you know, these people are a tribe. Yeah. And they're sitting around a fire, and that's a very deep tribal ritual,
mm-hmm.
which is to sit around the fire and eat your food as a group rather than going off on your own.
Right.
So I like that. I didn't realize that.
And I like Glenn's comment about the fact that after he got done eating the owl, just like Grandma used to make.
Yes.
My first response, and I thought somebody should have looked at him and said, "Your grandma made owl."
So later,
at Lori and Rick.
Yes, later on, you know, Carol brings food to Daryl.
Oh yes, yes.
Who's keeping watch on top of an overturned bus? She mentions that the rifle had some kick and left her sore. To which Daryl rubs her shoulders. Aw.
And then she hits on him.
Yes.
Which I think.
Yeah, they're such flirtatious people with each other. The only other people that are more flirtatious would be Beth and Carl.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Rick eventually joins the group around the campfire and urges them to get some rest. They will move further into the prison the next day. It looks, he says, and quote, "It looks like this place fell pretty early," he observes, and predicts there will likely be stockpiles of food and weapons and medicine inside. And I'm going to jump a little bit ahead because when he talks about weapons, really, all they really have are...
Not bad. Flashbangs. CS triple chasers. Not sure how they'd work on walkers, but we'll take them.
So they didn't really get a lot because really prisons, in all reality, tend not to carry that much weapons that we would use to kill people.
You wouldn't expect an armory in a prison.
No.
I mean, I'm actually surprised they didn't find like a stockpile of tasers.
That would be it. They'd have a, you know, quite a few tasers, you know, a bunch of batons and stuff like that, flashbangs and tear gas that you would find in there. But what I really like is when they go through that is also the foreshadowing of when he says, "Not sure if this is really going to work on walkers, but we'll take them." It doesn't work on walkers, but it certainly helped them when they infiltrate Woodbury.
Right.
They wouldn't have been able to do what they did in Woodbury had it not been for the flashbangs and the tear gas that they found.
Very true. I like the. I actually like the discussion between Laurie and Rick, just to back it up for a second, because I think it's notable in that she's like, you know, telling him that he's that everyone else needs to relax a little, and he's just like, you can relax after we're done, yeah. kind of thing. And then she goes on to say that she needs to talk about things, and he immediately tells her, well, then go talk to Herschel. You know, he's the psychologist of the group. Leave me alone.
Well, why don't I just play it?
Okay, I didn't know you had it.
Well, I gave you the list. You can look.
Now, wait a minute.
I appreciate everything you're doing, and we all do. But it's been a death march, and they're exhausted. Can we just enjoy this for a few days?
Maybe we'll be here in a few days. It's no time for a picnic.
No, but it's time to get the house in order.
What do you think I'm doing?
Your absolute best.
Don't patronize me.
I'm not. I'm just saying, the baby is about to be here, and we need to talk about what
about
happened.
What?
Things. We've been avoiding the most.
You want to talk? Talk to Herschel. I'm doing stuff, Lori. Thanks. Jeez. Isn't that enough? I'm still here.
You're right.
Now, as apologetic as she is, I mean, you really have to wonder how much she's taking, you know, it feels for what happened to the group. Glenn Mazzaria stated it that, well, I'll play Glenn's.
Well, you know, I think since the group's come together and everyone's got each other's back, Laurie sees herself as the weak link. You know, she's carrying this baby. That baby's going to be a problem. Every time that baby cries, it's going to summon walkers.
Hookers.
Hookers, yes.
Hookers, that's what I want to know. It sounded like hookers.
Yeah, I thought that too. you know, and, but...
Babies summon hookers. Keep that in mind, those of you who need a hooker.
But then later on, as she is talking to Herschel, you know, she talks about how she completely feels about everything. Here's her talking to Herschel.
He hates me. He's too good a man to say it, but I know. I put him in chain at odds. I put that knife into his hand.
You know who doesn't give a shit about that? This baby.
So, in two different cases, you have her talking to Rick, you know, trying to get Rick to open up, you know. And for so long, I'm like, I hate Lori, I hate Lori, I hate Lori. Now, after rewatching this, I feel bad for Lori because you realize that, you know, even though she did bring on a lot of the stuff on herself, at the same time, she's trying to make amends.
Mm-hmm.
And she's being shot down at every turn.
Yeah. I mean, well, in Rick's case, though, she's misreading him for the most part. I mean, yeah, he probably really dislikes the position that she put him in and the position that he's currently in. But really what he's doing is he's playing the same role that any head of household would do. I mean, when he says, I'm doing stuff, Lori, I'm doing things, he's basically going, you know, she keeps asking him, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? And he's looking at her going, I'm doing, you know, I'm doing it. Get off my back.
Is that kind of like, you know, not to get sexist here, but like the stay at home mom that is complaining to her husband that, you know, you're never around for our children.
Yes.
And the dad going, wait a minute, if it wasn't for me going to work, we would have no roof to put over their heads.
Yeah, you are. It's exactly the same thing. So I guess you can still feel sorry for the stay-at-home mom, but it's kind of weird that I'm playing this role all of a sudden because, you know, while everybody was hating on Lori, I kept telling us, you know, I kept warning you, and it worked, is that they have to make us later like her before they can kill her, and this is one way they did it, is you start to sympathize. You start going, oh, she's the stay-at-home mom. And Rick has no sympathy. No wonder, you know, all this happened.
Hmm.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's get a girl's perspective on this.
Well, we, you know, as a single mom, it's a lot of work. And so I think Glory just feels that she needs, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that she needs that attention. She needs Rick to affirm that he's okay, they're okay. I think she just needs that comfort. So it doesn't matter how hard he was working there or what he was doing with her. The fact that they're not even talking and that there's no communication and nothing between the two of them, I think that's what she wanted.
She just wanted the comfort, and to where Rick was thinking that what he needed to do was provide.
Yes, and that's all he was doing was providing. He wasn't giving that.
But it was all he was. I mean, in his defense, it was probably all he was capable of at that point.
Well, after everything that he was going through, but he has every right to for what he was going through. But yeah, that's what I think she was trying to do, was get his attention, saying, "Hey, and I need you right now." And he was like, "No, I don't have time for you."
You know, and in a different world, non-zombie world, they would have probably went to like a marriage counselor or something,
right?
To kind of work all this out. I'm not kidding about that. I mean, don't you think? You know, with what's going on, you know, if it wasn't in a zombie apocalyptic world. In our modern society, this would have been like a situation where they would have said, fine, we'll go to a mediator and have a mediator help us work this out.
A mediator of some sort. I mean, if there wasn't a zombie apocalypse going on and he found out that his best friend just fathered a child with his wife and none of the other stuff that was going to...
And he killed his best friend.
I think the mediator he'd be going to would be, you know, somehow really
court appointed.
Yeah, it would be court appointed. and there wouldn't be much saving of a marriage going on.
I was looking at it from a different angle, but I was talking about the communication issue, but okay.
There you go. Just saying, you have to put the if you're gonna put a perspective around it, let's use the real perspective.
Okay.
I think when it comes to dealing with his wife, in a lot of ways, he's doing the best he possibly can. So I she's basically getting into this feeling sorry for herself mode because she knows she put him into this, but at the same time, she can't be crying about it because she created it. And I think the ultimate problem is in the next clip that you're going to probably play, which is, what about the zombie baby that we might end up with?
Yes, what about the zombie baby?
The baby. I think I lost it.
You haven't felt it move?
Nothing. And no Braxton Hicks. At first I thought it was exhaustion or malnutrition.
You're anemic.
If we're all infected, then so's the baby. So what if it's stillborn? What if it's dead inside me right now? What if it rips me apart?
Stop. Don't let your fear take control of you.
Okay. Let's say it lives, and I die during childbirth.
That's not going to happen.
Why not? How many women died in childbirth before modern medicine? If I come back, what if I attack it? Or you? Rick or Carl. If I do, if there is any chance, you put me down immediately. You don't hesitate. Me, the baby. If we're walkers, you don't hesitate and you don't try to save us. Okay?
Don't try to save him.
Yes.
Let a walker eat all of Lori. All by himself.
So that actually brought up a few things that we haven't actually needed to deal with, but you know,
the zombie baby,
I would imagine that it would eat through her, at least claw, because as it dies, the teeth that are still inside their gums, they just haven't come out, would the meat would deteriorate until they're able to be able to come through and bite. Same thing, just like with the nails on the zombie that tore open Dale's chest or stomach, you know, was because of the meat deteriorating around the bones of his fingers. Mm-hmm. So I could see that happening.
Yeah, I mean, this is we mentioned this before. It was in the Dawn of the Dead remake. I mean, the idea of that baby, you know, the zombie baby. The other part that I find interesting about this, though, is that these are actually what they're talking about, or what she's talking about, is actual documented psychological things that pregnant women have actually thought about. But in this case, it can be taken literally.
Yes.
Because one of the things that's constantly that I've read in different places is like the idea that a baby is just a parasite and is eating the mother.
That's true. Theoretically, it is true.
Yeah. And that's, well, and some mothers will go through, you know, that's where the postpartum depression and everything comes in. And it's an interesting that they took that concept and went all the way with it.
Right.
That the baby could literally be eating the mother.
You know, and then the other part that she brings up, a good one, is the mortality rate. It from not having modern medicine, pre 1984, a study in 1984, should I say, showed that communities or people that did not use modern medicine to give birth had a mortality rate of 2.7 times higher for, the paternal mortality rate was 2.7 times higher. So that would be the parent, the mom.
Yeah.
And the maternal mortality rate, God, that's hard to say, was 97 times higher. So you have a 97 times greater chance of the baby dying without modern medicine, and you're almost three times greater chance of dying, of the parent dying without modern medicine.
Yeah. It's something to really be concerned with, especially now that they don't have modern medicine anymore.
Yeah. Which kind of makes you wonder, you know, stuff like the Hatfield and McCoys, that each mother had, like, you know, 17 children.
Yeah. And how many mothers did they go through to get those 17 children?
One mother, 17 children.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's pretty crazy. That is pretty.
Oh, my goodness.
But, yeah, it's definitely something to be concerned with in this world specifically. And we have a woman who's going, you know, well, that we know now that her mortality rate is pretty low. But,
Well, her mortality rate is so high, it's almost 100%. It is 100%. And then also on top of that, you have the foreshadowing that went on with that, because she talks about, you know, Rick or Carl killing her.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we find out that it's Carl that ends up killing her.
Well, that ends up finishing her.
Finishing her, but at the same... but. No different. She's talking about one of them taking her out if she becomes a walker. Carl right. just did it before she became a walker.
Very
true. He saw Shane.
Yeah. Well, they've been around. They know how it works.
Yeah. But this is talking about, like, close family.
Yeah.
Different when you see other people, but when you saw somebody that's close to you, like Shane was, he didn't want anybody else to do it. And it was his mom.
All right, let's fly through. We're running out of time here, so I'm going to fly through the next few of this. Elsewhere, we have Michonne entering a convenience store and kills the walkers inside with her katana. She finds a packet of aspirin on the ground and leaves with the pills in hand. I love the katana scene because she actually slices completely through the skull of one and decapitates the other.
Yeah. Yep.
That is one badass katana.
And one badass swing.
Yeah. Now, you studied katanas. They actually rate them, or they used to rate them, by how many bodies they go through, correct?
Yes, they used to, yes.
Wow.
Now they actually rate them by, you know, how many folds of steel and all that. But
well, they use an analog, which is like a rolled up bamboo.
Right.
Rolled up bamboo cloth, which is supposed to have the same... tensile strength as a human body, but they used to actually take, you know, criminals and whoever, line them up and have a samurai cut through them, and however many people. This is a three blade because it cuts through three people
mm-hmm.
in one swipe.
So we know she has at least a two.
She has at least a two blade, yes. But to go through the skull, too.
Yeah, well, and we've discussed that before, though, is that, you know, I mean, depending on how long they were dead, the skull would, you know, the skull bone would have
deteriorated, so it could be soft.
Yeah, so it'd be a lot softer. But still, I mean, it was still pretty impressive.
It was very impressive. She kicks ass.
The next day, Rick leads a group of small group of people through the prison yard where they fight walkers in riot gear and gas masks. This is where we get the what I'm calling the face-off walker.
Yes.
T-Dog knows a walker in civilian clothes and surmises it entered the grounds from the outside, which might mean a breach in the walls.
And walker of the episode is face-off walker.
Face-off walker, which is killed by my girl, Maggie.
And by now, she is like really excited to be doing this.
I know. Isn't it strange how you have Maggie, who transformed from being like the simple, cute country girl to this very badass warrior?
And she's like, yeah, it really is warrior. I mean, she's got a warrior cry and everything.
She does.
But you know what? She's still hot doing it.
Yeah, I can't.
Meanwhile,
you can't agree with that, or you can't deny it.
Meanwhile, let's discuss Herschel's doctor bag.
Herschel's doctor bag. That's actually
gift turned my daughter into an Instagram sensation.
What? Get off there.
Your gift to your daughter did what?
Boy, I thought you had a boy.
I thought you had a son. Wow.
Before we get to that, I'm going to have to leave that in now just for...
Yeah, go ahead. It's fun.
Before we get to that, I do want to get to my...
Oh, yes.
And now your survival tip of the week.
I feel like we're all over the place. It's been so long since we did a rewatch.
Yeah, I know.
That I'm having a hard time trying to get back into the flow and the feel of it.
Well, we digress a little bit, but it seems to be, you know, we get back on task. We're doing it.
So my survival tip of the week is when you collect water, do not cross-contaminate. And this comes back to when Daryl said to everyone, you know, let's go get some water before we're running low. We can boil it later. Mm. And... by cross-contamination, what you don't want to do is get what's known as raw water, so water that you get out of a river, stream, whatever body of water, and drink that water by cross-contaminating it with processed water, water that's been boiled or purified. So what you need to do is you need to have one container that is... There's a few different ways you can do it. If you only have one container, like say your canteen will go with, then what you want to do is you want to boil or treat it inside of that container. So if you have, like, say, a water bottle, a plastic water bottle, what you're going to want to do is actually pasteurize it inside of that water bottle so that the bottle itself heats up and kills anything that is around there. You want to get all of the water out of it. You don't want there to be drops of water left in it. The other option you can do is collect with one container that is only used for raw water and boil and drink from another container. So pour that water into another container. So say you have that plastic bottle and you can't pasteurize it. You don't know what pasteurizing. You only know boiling. What you do is you take from that water bottle, you dump it into a pan or a pot or something, a tea kettle. We'll go with a tea kettle. You boil it in that tea kettle, but then you only drink from that tea kettle. You do not pour it back into that same water bottle because the water that's left over in that water bottle can contaminate the good water, especially the longer that you allow it to sit, the more microbes have the ability to multiply. The third option is to use three different ones. So you collect from one water bottle A, you dump it into, into a pot or a bunch of water bottles, you dump them into a pot, and then you take from that pot which has been heating the water and heating the pot to kill everything off, and you dump it from that pot into clean water bottles that have not touched the raw water. Like I said, you want to not have microbes left when you're drinking. And by that, I mean like Giardia. I almost said sarsaparilla, but Salmonella, Giardia, Cryptosporidium, any bacteria, any viruses, such as the viruses that create the walkers. You do not want that. So you do not want to, just like you wouldn't cross-contaminate, you know, your cutting boards of chicken with lettuce, you do not want to cross-contaminate your water. Now, I will tell you the chances of the microbes getting into your system and multiplying from a little bit of water is pretty slim, but remember, they have no medicine. So you want to get have as close to zero chance of getting dysentery as you can, because in this world, in any world really, dysentery without an IV is deadly.
Yes.
And that was your...
Go ahead.
And now your survival tip of the week.
And quickly, if I may add.
Yes.
Is that don't leave out the fact, though, that as a parent, even you are aware of this, and all parents should be aware of this one, is that if you have a good enough bottle that you're carrying this, you know, this water that you need to boil, just throw it in the pan and boil it, too.
Yeah, that's the other option.
Yeah, that way you've
killed off the microbes in there.
Right, you've made that nice and clean, and then you can dump your new water into it.
Right.
So you did everything all at once, one move. Wow, that's
all right. That's a good one that I didn't put on there with the three.
excellently put though. All right. Nobody wants dysentery. That would not be fun.
No, Montezuma's revenge sucks. I'm going to assume I've never actually had it because I know how to treat water.
And speaking of water, or treating water well, though, let's get back to the doctor bag.
The doctor bag. so I want to hold off on the doctor bag until the end, though.
Okay. I didn't actually even think about that one until it got brought up in the Talking Dead.
Yeah, and you know, after it was brought up, you can't not notice it now.
Yeah, I know, right.
So basically, okay, so we're going to jump ahead. They push through, they take over the prison and everything, and they find a safe place. One of the places, you know, they stay is in the cell block. And I really had to get a cut of this because I just love my cut number 9, which is Carl thinking that he's actually going to be able to bunk with Beth.
Pretty gross. Yeah, remember the storage units? It's actually comfortable. Check it out.
You find your cell yet?
Yeah, I was just making sure Beth is safe. See you tomorrow.
See ya.
I just love that scene because you have Carl there, you know, flirting with Beth, you know, they're going back and forth, and then...
And he's just going to move in.
Yeah, he's taking his stuff and he's checking the top bunk, and then all of a sudden you have Herschel standing behind him. All right, and so, yes, the last thing is, of course, chopping the leg off. And in this one, you know, the Kleenex that Mazaria talks about in this clip.
Scott Wilson, who plays Herschel, had the idea, what if I carry a little medical bag? So actually that axe is, you know, clean. It was not used in the zombie killing and stuff. And you can see Andy Lincoln, who played Rick, just did a great job. He doesn't know if it's going to work. It's making him sick. But he's the kind of leader that can just summon that up to keep these people alive. He's going to do what he has to.
So what this tells us is that the fact that they had a Kleenex is that they anticipated having to lop off somebody's limb.
Yeah.
Which I didn't catch the first time. The first time, and I think we talked about this the first time, was that, you know, if they were killing walkers with this, why would he not get...
Yeah, we did talk about it because we didn't make the connection that it was a Kleenex.
Yeah, I thought it was just something they were carrying around, like, to kill.
Yeah, exactly. It was one of their weapons that, you know, he just used. So, and then, of course, after watching it, you see him carrying the axe around everywhere. He's always got that medical bag on his back.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, you even watch Rick now, after, you know, learning this, actually pull it straight out of the medical bag.
Yeah.
Before he brings it down with, like, four different whacks.
Yeah. It did take him a while to do that, didn't it?
So, I think that was something that, as far as the writers and, you know, is all of them saying, you know what, this was a really good idea, keeping a medical bag around like this.
Yeah. And there was a lot of interesting questions that come out of this one that I know they talk about more in the next episode that we'll get to next week and be able to dive into that one. But one of the things that I thought about is that they argued later about whether or not to cauterize.
Yes. And, you know, for that, I should actually bring the guys from the Evolution of the Apocalypse on, because they actually did a whole podcast on cauterization.
Oh, sweet.
And basically the way that the medical, what they feel now is medically it's better not to cauterize. It's better not to cauterize because you actually get less infection and because you have less dead skin. Remember, cauterizing is just dead skin.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is you actually get more infection from cauterizing. You stop the bleeding, but you can stop the bleeding by pinching off the veins and stuff. Your body will constrict.
Right.
And stop the bleeding itself. So it's better to do that than to cauterize. Cauterizing is old school. It's kind of like, you know, sucking the venom of a snake out with your mouth.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll send a note to Mike and Matt to see if they can come on, or if I can get the guy that they had on who actually is in the medical field, see if we can get him on next week.
That would be awesome to actually talk about that part of it.
Yes.
And then last but not least, we get to the most important part of the episode, because as far as I'm concerned, every single Walking Dead episode should end with somebody saying, "Holy shit."
Yes.
Oh, I was so bummed that it ended that way. And then I remembered, oh, yeah, we have already watched all of them.
It's like, oh, yeah, I know what happens next.
You know, the thing is, I'm going to start my music, and for my music for today, we're going to get serenaded.
Of all the money e'er I had, I spent it in
good. So, yeah, I think, you know, rewatching this, there are always a lot of things that you don't realize as far as foreshadowing.
Yes.
And this episode foreshadowed a lot of what's going to happen when you look at it in retrospect.
And all I've done.
So I think with that, what do you say we wrap things up? And, you know, get the frog out of here.
All right, let's get the frog out of here.
All right. So remember, I want to let you guys know to get a hold of us. Give us a call at 503-454-6941. You can also leave voice messages on our SpeakPipe account by going to the CreeperCast webpage and clicking on the little SpeakPipe banner on the left-hand side, or going to creepercast.com/feedback and leave us a voice message like Casey did last week.
Yes.
You can also send us an email at feedback@creepercast.com. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/creepercast and on Twitter at twitter.com/creepercast. Also on Google Plus at creepercast.com/G+. Jeff, can you tell them about the iTunes sweepstakes?
The iTunes sweepstakes is where you can go to the CreeperCast or the Walking Dead Week in Review. That would be this particular show's iTunes page. Leave us a review. And as soon as we have 25 reviews, whether they're 5 stars or not, you get in a drawing for Jason's hat or something. I don't know, whatever clothing item he decides to draw out of. Nobody wants to do this.
We don't want to know.
Anyway, we'll draw a winner from both, and you get a choice of one item out of our CreeperCast swag store.
Yes. All right. Thank you for joining me, Jeff and Loves. And Casey will be back next week.
Awesome.
And all the sweethearts the air I had would wish me one more day to stay. But since it falls unto my lot that I should rise and you should not, I'll gently rise and I'll softly call. Good night and joy be with you all. Good night and joy be with you all.
Thank you for listening to my uncle's podcast.